over the next 5 or 6 minutes, there's going to be some detailed journalism here. And I know it's heavy, but I think it's very, very important and in the public interest for us to let you hear what our journalism is saying. And I know it's detailed, but please bear with me. Now, remember, the DUP is publicly declaring they're putting all the information into the public domain. So we want you, the public, to know this morning the questions Arlene Foster is refusing to answer. We asked,
was Arlene Foster aware prior to the interview she gave the BBC on the 15th of December 2016 that Dr. McCormick had informed a member or members of the DUP that he believed a DUP special advisor, whether a specific name was given or not, had been seeking to offer advice or exert influence over the matter of when cost controls for the non-domestic RHI scheme should be introduced?
When we wrote that specific question and give it to the DUP, Arlene Foster has refused to answer this question individually. We also asked,
was it ever suggested to Arlene Foster that Dr. McCormick believed that Andrew Crawford was the DUP special advisor who had been seeking to offer advice or exert influence over the matter of when cost controls for the non-domestic RHI scheme should be introduced?
Arlene Foster has refused to answer this question individually. We also asked,
if so, did Arlene Foster know about Dr. McCormick's belief referred to in our previous question before she gave her speech to the Assembly on the 19th of December 2016?
Arlene Foster has refused to answer this question individually. Instead, while refusing to answer our specific questions with specific answers, the DUP said they are referring us to what Arlene Foster said to the Assembly. Here it is.
The former Deputy Minister claims that he made a decision to amend the RHI scheme, but that he was overruled by special advisers. Since last week, I have specifically investigated this claim. The evidence is clear. The only decision taken by the Minister was in early September to amend the scheme in November. The Minister was not subsequently overruled by special advisers, and I am clear that whatever representations may have been made by anyone on this issue, it was not being done with the authority of the party. Now, I understand from Minister Hamilton that the Permanent Secretary recalls being told at the time that some in the party wanted the scheme kept open. He was unaware of the source of this suggestion, but believes it may have been based on the erroneous but widespread view at the time that because the scheme was AMI-funded, that it was possible to maximise take-up without creating a problem. I have checked and confirmed that no minister made any such request or took any interest in the decision taken in September 2015. The DUP party officers took no interest in this issue and gave no instructions. It is therefore clear that whatever the belief, the DUP did not ask the Deputy Minister to extend the scheme. I also understand that when the suggestion of a 4-week extension was mentioned in the Deputy Issues meeting on the 24th of August, the Deputy Minister did not voice any objections. In fact, he endorsed the decision. The bottom line is that this decision was taken by the Deputy Minister, and no attempt was made to overrule him, and no such allegation was made at the time. In fairness to the Deputy Minister, I should say that I also understand from Minister Hamilton that departmental officials did not object to a 4-week extension.
So what we've done this morning is we've highlighted the questions this morning that Arlene Foster is still refusing to answer. Now we turn to the questions the DUP are refusing to answer about other members of their party. Remember, Dr. Andrew Crawford was the special adviser who resigned last week. He said, I did not attempt to keep the RHI scheme open at the original tariff against the wishes of the minister. Indeed, he said, I specifically stated on the 31st of July 2015 that the department will need to make changes from the 1st of October. But you see, since this statement could have a number of different meanings, we followed it up with specific questions, which Dr. Crawford and the DUP are still refusing to answer. We told the DUP that we noted that Andrew Crawford said he did not attempt to keep the RHI scheme open at the original tariff against the wishes of the minister. The words against the wishes of the minister could affect the whole meaning of a response. For example, take me. I'm a BBC radio presenter. I could say accurately that I have never presented a radio programme in my life against the wishes of Donald Duck. That statement would be accurate. So we went back to the DUP and we said, in this instance, we are not asking if it was against the wishes of the minister. And we followed up with these questions about Dr. Andrew Crawford. We asked them.
Does Andrew Crawford deny he expressed a view to any special advisor that the more lucrative part of the RHI scheme without cost controls should be kept open beyond the 1st of October 2015?
The DUP and Andrew Crawford are refusing to answer this question. We also asked,
does Andrew Crawford deny that he spoke to Timothy Cairns and indicated that the more lucrative part of the RHI scheme without cost controls should be kept open beyond the 1st of October 2015?
The DUP and Andrew Crawford are refusing to answer this question. Now, separately, we refer to another part of Andrew Crawford's statement in which he said, quote, indeed, I specifically stated on the 31st of July 2015 that the department will need to make changes from the 1st of October. Here's what we asked.
Which individual did Andrew Crawford state the following words to on the 31st of July 2015? We'll need to make changes from the 1st of October.
The DUP and Andrew Crawford are refusing to answer the question. We also asked,
what changes was Andrew Crawford referring to when he indicated they needed to be made from the 1st of October?
The DUP and Andrew Crawford are refusing to answer this question. We also asked,
did these changes relate to the non-domestic RHI scheme?
The DUP and Andrew Crawford are refusing to answer this question. And now we turn to a third set of questions remaining unanswered. Stephen Brimstone was a senior special advisor within the DUP before he resigned last year. On Monday, using assembly privilege, the TUV's Jim Allister said the following about Stephen Brimstone.
In Mr. Brimstone's case, he built a new house some years ago. He had a biomass boiler in it. He took it out to qualify for this scheme because you have to have a new boiler. And he put in a new non-domestic scheme boiler under this scheme in order to qualify. That is the sort of rip-off that brings disrepute to all of this scheme.
The DUP has said Mr. Brimstone is not intending to make a statement about Mr. Allister's allegations. Now, the reason that we've listed this quite long list of questions which remain unanswered is so that you, the public, can be cognizant of this when you hear the DUP telling you that they have, quote, put everything out there. In fact, key questions remain unanswered. And Sam, we're proud to get your initial reaction to what we've just broadcast there. It's when we have been very, very tight and specific with the language of our questions, responding to the DUP statements that they haven't been able to provide a reply.
That's right. And I think what we have seen here is that language has been used really at several junctures during this whole saga, and in particular the statement just about 2 weeks ago now from the DUP spad John Robinson, where he gave a very clear impression that he had no sort of family links to the scheme. And then the very next day it emerges that there is a family link. I think those sorts of statements...
Well, he was saying he wasn't married at the time and it was his father-in-law, correct?
That's right. But, I mean, I think that it was something which was strictly speaking true, but it gave an impression which I think most people would see as, if not misleading, certainly not giving you the full story as to what he knew about it in terms of his current family members. And I think that it adds to the sense that all those questions that haven't been answered adds to the sense that really very little here is being voluntarily handed over by anyone almost in this, certainly on the side of the DUP. And that really what has emerged has either been dragged out of them via leaks of the media, it's been given over by Dr. McCormick during the PAC hearing, or it's come out through Jonathan Bell blowing the whistle on various aspects of this. And really, I suppose, the juxtaposition between Arlene Foster standing up saying, I have nothing to hide, and then this very consistent stance of not answering what are very legitimate questions, doesn't sit very easily.
Jamala, so you heard there when we put questions in about Dr. Andrew Crawford and the chronology of this, and I'm not drawing any link whatsoever, but we put some of our questions in and questioning his initial statement early in the morning on Thursday, and he resigned that afternoon. But the DUP won't even tell us if the changes that he said in his statement that he asked for on the 1st of October, they won't even tell us what those changes are. Or where, when we ask. So there could be changes about anything. They could technically be changes. Andrew Crawford asked for wallpaper in Stormont. You read it as if it could be changes to the tiering of the scheme, but they won't tell us what the changes were.
Well, first of all, I commend you on your very forensic questions. And these, of course, are exactly the sort of questions that need to be pursued in the public inquiry, where there will be no hiding place for any of these witnesses, and the sooner the better in that regard. But the fact that there has been a running away from the questions, it does build the public question of what is there to hide here. These are legitimate, relatively straightforward, factual questions, demanding an answer, and particularly demanding an answer in the context where those being questioned are those who have protested that they are being open, transparent, and putting everything out there. And then when they are specifically pressed to put out there matters which would elaborate on what has been said, they go silent. So I think people will draw their own conclusions from that, and I don't think they're very comfortable conclusions for those refusing to answer.
And we have gone back to the DUP many times, by the way. This was not just Rumwacrest. So we give them numerous opportunities to reply to the questions, given the seriousness of this story. We, in fact, went back again yesterday to ask for a response to our questions to Dr. Andrew Crawford. And we had submitted them last Thursday. And the DUP in their response yesterday said, Dr. Crawford stated his position to the BBC in December. He's indicated his desire to see a full and independent public inquiry established and will be happy to give a full account to the inquiry. A public inquiry is now belatedly to be established, and we believe this is the best place for a full, detailed and independent investigation of the full facts surrounding the RHI scheme. In other words, they're still not answering our specific questions.
And of course, Stephen, that pushes it beyond the election. And that, of course, is part of the ambition. As the electorate would be entitled to answers to these questions before they go to the polls.
The leader of the Alliance Party, Naomi Long, joining us now this morning. So, Naomi,
Good morning, to
focus this, and we can step through it. So, at the beginning of the show, we are reporting that a senior member of the DUP has approached the Nolan Show and told us that on the 19th of December, when Arlene Foster stood up in the Assembly, she knew of Dr. Andrew McCormick's belief about a special advisor, and she did not reveal that to the Assembly specifically. And we've broadcast the words which she used.
Well, I think, Stephen, it just really adds to the concerns that I have been expressing since this story first broke, that a simple questioning in the Assembly or even a questioning by the PAC is unlikely to bring out the full truth of what happened during this period. And I think the only way that can be resolved is through the public inquiry, which we have belatedly actually seen being implemented. I think unless people are questioned under oath, unless there is able to be the compelling of witness and testimony and so on, we won't get to the truth of it, because what we get on each occasion where questions are asked is we get a partial truth, a partial disclosure. But often what is not disclosed is more significant than what is. And I think that erodes public confidence, because then we get this drip feed of information, layer after layer, which just makes people then doubt the veracity of everything that they hear. And I'm sure some of what we have been told is true, but there is very little of it that you can have confidence in, simply because of the way that it has to be dragged out of people rather than it being offered up at the beginning.
So do you have a policy within your party that you say everything you know? Surely journalists have to drag it out of you lot too.
Well, no, I mean, if we're asked a question, we answer it to the best of our ability. That doesn't mean to say that we're going to have all the facts and figures. I mean, you will know on occasion, Stephen, where you've asked me a question, I would say to you, look, I'm going to have to check that, but my understanding is whatever. But we should get full disclosure. And we don't do that, just to be clear. We don't do that simply out of public interest, though it is important to the public interest. But we do it also because it's important from our perspective in terms of protecting our position that we disclose as much as we know as early as possible, because it actually only makes things worse if you don't do that as soon as you can. There is a wider question, though, that you've unearthed here. And I think that it's one that others have referred to this morning, but I think it's one that persists. And that is about why special advisers from one department are involved in the business of another department. Each minister employs a special adviser. That is a relationship between the minister and their special adviser. That person is party political or permitted to be political and give the minister political advice in terms of how to handle things. But they are that minister's sole adviser, and that's who they should work with. What we have uncovered throughout this is this web of advisers who seem to be running ministers rather than the other way around. Even in questioning by my colleague Stephen Farry at the Economy Committee last week, we discovered that the patch repair that went through to try to stop the leaching of funds out of the scheme last week had been instigated by, as we were told, a special advisor. Stephen picked up on that language and said, not the special advisor for the department, a special advisor, is it someone from another department? And it turned out that it was a special advisor from another department that brought that plan forward. So there is a wider question as to why special advisors in one department are becoming so intimately involved in the business of another.
Let us know what you think this morning. By the way, we're constantly this morning on to the DUP. They told us before the show that they felt that they would be putting someone up to respond to this morning. And despite the numerous calls that we're attempting to make to them from after we've come on air, we don't seem to be able to get through to them. What are you left thinking, Seamus Close, as a commentator in politics for quite a long time about this story this morning?
Well, firstly, on just to pick up on the last point that Naomi was making about special advisers, it strikes me that there has been developed a culture of virtually unfettered power surrounding special advisers within the Democratic Unionist Party. And that seems to be built upon party first. Do whatever is necessary. Don't get caught. But if you are caught, the party, you'll have the strength of the party around you. And there's form for that. In a previous occasion with the Red Sky situation, we saw where a special advisor that was under a lot of heat actually got promotion. In my opinion, If a SPAD steps out of line, they should be sacked, not promoted. With regard to the wider issue, it seems that we now have a culture of ducking and diving. And if I can use the old boxing analogy that Carl Frampton would be proud of, whenever you're asked questions that you don't like or that you feel uncomfortable, you refuse to answer them. But then you add insult to injury to the electorate, because then you go on the attack and you attack, for example, the media, for which the electorate in Northern Ireland should be eternally grateful that we have such forensic type of journalists who are prepared to dig and dig and dig to try to get to that which every democracy would depend on, namely the truth. But the avoidance of the truth and the blaming the media for asking questions is something which I think the politicians should be aware of. They thought whenever this heating scheme came to the fore, there's not going to be an election for 5 years. There's going to be an election in a number of weeks. And I put it to them straight, unless they come out with the truth very, very soon, they have nowhere to hide because the electorate don't like being misled.
Well, they would say that they are not misleading anyone, and they would stand by that. Seamus Close, thank you. Jim Allister, thank you very much indeed.